translation. By such childhood pastimes as this, he is drowning the inhabitants of Gokula in pools of ecstasy, and is revealing to those devotees who are absorbed in knowledge of his supreme majesty and opulence that he is only conquered by devotees whose pure love is imbued with intimacy and is free from all conceptions of awe and reverence. With great love, I again offer my obeisances to Lord Damodar hundreds and hundreds of times. To understand these very beautiful prayers, you have to understand that there are two types of love of God in the spiritual world, and you'll also see that present in the material world. In the Vaikuntha region of the spiritual world, the Vaikuntha planets, predominated by Lord Narayan and his consort Lakshmi, Krishna is there in his expansion of Narayan, four hands. There the love of God is in the mood of awe and reverence. The majesty, the opulence, the power of the Lord is the reality. Everyone there, all the devotees know that. Dude, this is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Then you have the confidential portion of the spiritual world, the topmost portion, called Goloka Vrindavan. And there, by the influence of Krishna's own pastime energy, Leela Shakti, which manages the Lord's pastimes. He doesn't think about it. He doesn't have to think about arranging his own enjoyment. He has a particular energy that automatically arranges everything for his maximum pleasure. That is how self-sufficient Krishna is. You don't have that kind of enjoying capacity. You always have to go outside of yourself to enjoy, and that's where the problems are. You always have to be in anxiety about making proper arrangements for your pleasure, and the arrangements fall through or they're not completely successful. Without being self-sufficient, there can be no claim to be the enjoyer. That the Lord is self-sufficient means he already has everything within himself to satisfy himself. Everything is Krishna's energies. Parasya Shakti Vividaiva Shriyate, the Upanishads say that his multifarious or variegated energies are spread everywhere. Through the Lord's internal spiritual potencies, he has arranged that Goloka Vrindavan does not permit knowledge of his opulence and power, does not permit knowledge that he's the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Because the purpose of Goloka Vrindavan is to be a facility for spontaneous, intimate exchanges between the Lord and his devotees, where the Lord simply thinks, this is my mother, this is my father, these are my friends, these are my girlfriends. That's all. The devotees there don't think that Krishna is God. And he himself sees himself as a cowherd boy. Those of you who have read Chaitanya Charitamrita may remember the verse where the Lord is speaking, saying that so many people are worshipping me in the mood of awe and reverence, offering very ornate hymns, majestic hymns. But I want something else besides that. Because the love becomes very stiff from one point of view by all this awe and reverence, veneration, ornate hymns. I want the spontaneous, intimate love where my devotees simply think I'm their most beloved object. You can see that Krishna enjoys all types of emotional experiences, emotional fulfillment, emotional exchanges. Some devotees are attracted to worshipping the Lord in awe and reverence, the majesty. Others are naturally attracted to the Lord's intimate displays of his pastimes in Goloka Vrindavan. This particular prayer is referring to the Lord's intimate spontaneous pastimes in the simple cowherd village of Vrindavan. The opulence of Vrindavan is the spontaneous loving affairs. In such a simple setting, the love is the deepest. The residents of Vrindavan, they don't even care to understand whether Krishna is God or not. All they know is he's the life of our life, the soul of our soul. We can't live without him. This prayer is speaking of these two different types of love of God. When you study nectar devotion, you'll also see more about this. Iti driksa lila bir ananda kunde. First of all, iti driksa lila bir. These are childhood pastimes that we're talking about, and what do they do? They're Krishna's own personal stock of intimate activities. Swalila means his own deeply personal activities. His own confidential activities. His own unofficial activities. Far more intimate and personal than the external activities of creating, maintaining, destroying universes. That's so far away from Bal Gopal, the baby cowherd boy in Vrindavan. What happens by this Swalila, Krishna's own personal stock of sweetest pastimes? Iti driksa lila bir anandakunde. There is the anandakund we were speaking of the other day. The pool of liquid ecstasies. So, Krishna with his pastimes, these pastimes of Bal Gopal, he plunges all the residents of Vrindavan in these pools, in the Anandakun of liquid ecstasy. That is the Lord's activity in Goloka. You can just meditate on this metaphor of somebody plunging you into pools of liquid ecstasy. This is the real understanding of God, far beyond creation, maintenance, and annihilation. He likes to engage in loving affairs with his devotees. But to become a devotee that the Lord trusts so much that he'll engage in intimate loving affairs with you, you have to become pure. You have to become qualified. People talk about love all the time, but they have no idea that to love properly requires qualification. Similarly, to understand God requires qualification. Sometimes people say God is love, or love is God. They are not prepared to have qualifications to love, nor are they prepared to have any qualification to understand God. Therefore, what is their so-called love? An outpouring of passion, rajagun. That's what they consider love. when my desires, my material desires, pour out, then I'm in a loving mood. Will you be a proper receptacle for my passion? Then that's love. This misunderstanding about love and this misunderstanding about God is there because people have no idea that they have to develop qualifications to love properly, qualifications to understand God. We have to undergo purificatory lifestyles to rise to the platform in which we can properly have loving exchanges, in which we can properly understand what is God. Otherwise, everything is very cheap. Otherwise, everything is not for real. From our standpoint of being caught in the grips of passion, we try to love. So often we don't even understand that this so-called love is just a emanation from our material body and mind at the moment. Right now my body and mind is feeling a particular way. Oh, it must be love. It reminds me of one song when I was a little boy. Something's got a hold of me. Ooh, it must be love. That's the standard thing, you know. Yeah, it must be love. It's got a hold of me. My body, my mind are spinning. It must be love. This is what happens when people don't understand they have to become qualified. Qualified means purified. So that you rise to a higher level. So that your body and mind become cleansed and cease to interfere with the pure loving expression of the soul. Material life means that the pure activity or pure expression of the soul is inhibited and distorted by the material body and mind. Then you're forced to operate within time because the body and mind are shaped by time, influenced by time, ruled by time. And naturally you'll be frustrated because as soon as time has a hand in things, there must be deterioration. And deterioration means frustration. You can't keep what you want to keep. Even if you actually get what you want, you can't keep it. So you become frustrated. If you want to take another look at your lifespan, a more accurate look, you can see your lifespan as a journey to old age in which you don't learn anything. You're growing old without learning anything. But if on that route to an ignorant death, your body and mind can feel some tizzy, then, ooh, it must be love. That is the standard. You don't even mind that you'll die an ignorant death, not knowing who you are, why you're here, what is the real self. That's all right, as long as I can feel some tizzies in my body and mind. Such persons can never understand even basic things about the science of God, Bhagavad Dharma. They don't even take into account that there is a supreme controller. They don't take into account that there has to be a cause of all causes. They don't take into account that there has to be a source of all energies. They don't even think about that. And in rare cases, when they do think about it, they don't accept the implications. If there's a cause of all causes, sarva karana karanam, if there's a source of all energies, then that means everything belongs to that source, and we have to take lessons from that source how to live, how to use everything. But no one thinks like that. And And certainly they cannot understand the pure, intimate, confidential, loving exchanges in Vrindavan, where the devotees never think that Krishna is God, and Krishna agrees to come under the control of the devotee's love. In this most intimate section of the spiritual world, Krishna has his special devotees who treat him not as God, but as their best friend, or their child, or their boyfriend. When Krishna is playing in the forest with the cowherd boys, they wrestle, they climb on his shoulders, they try to defeat him. They think, we're just as good as you. That gives Krishna pleasure. And Krishna's girlfriends sometimes chastise him for his naughtiness. Krishna's the best at being fresh. He's the best at saying fresh things. So the gopis always they can pretend sometimes to be disturbed and offended by Krishna's fresh statements. In this particular pastime, you're hearing about Krishna's interaction with Mother Yashoda. She sees Krishna as her child, not as God. With Krishna's Bal Gopal, his baby pastimes, he's plunging all the inhabitants of Vrindavan in these pools of liquid ecstasy, the Ananda Kund. What would Krishna do as soon as he could walk? This is later than his killing of Putana witch. Now he's walking around Vrindavan, he and Balaram. What do they do? First of all, actually, before they start walking, they start crawling through the ground, which is muddied by cow dung, cow urine. And they hear the sound of ankle bells on other people's legs, and they think, that's our mother. As ladies, they wear ankle bells. So they begin to follow the sound. But then the persons who they're following start commenting, oh, who are these two beautiful boys? How nice. And then Krishna and Balaram understand, oh, these are not our mother, and they run away, or they crawl away. What else do they do? Sometimes they see calves, and they grab onto the tail of the calf, and the calf becomes frightened and runs, dragging them through the ground of Vrindavan, and the ground is wet with cow dung and cow urine. So the calves are running here and there, dragging Krishna and Balaram, who are holding onto their tails. The calves are afraid. Krishna and Balaram are afraid. So all the residents of Vrindavan, they're watching this scene. Whatever Krishna does is all attractive. So this is how the Supreme Personality of Godhead enjoys himself in his private abode. And we discussed how Krishna and Balaram would go into other houses and do mischief. They would do things like let all the calves go before milking time. What would happen is that if you know anything about milking cows, in the traditional method, you want the mother cow to see her calf in front of her, because then she'll give more milk out of affection. And so that way the farmer can get more milk from the cow. But Krishna and Balaram would set the calves loose so that the calves would drink all the milk from the mothers. There wouldn't be anything left for the people. And they would go into other houses, steal butter, yogurt. Their special burglary technique was that they would take a stone and break the pots of butter and yogurt that were hanging from the ceiling. Everyone would store their milk products like that, clay pots hanging from the ceiling. Krishna and Balaram would really get into the burglarizing the houses, burgling the houses. They would pile up planks of wood, and then they would be able to reach the ceiling. And they would take a piece of stone and break the pot, and then the yogurt would leak out, and they would drink it that way. And they would distribute milk products to the monkeys. If they didn't find anything to steal, what would they do? Pinch the babies in the houses, make them cry. Sometimes there was no other mischief for them to do. Not only would they pass urine, they'd also pass stool in the houses. So the elder residents of Vrindavan would pretend, oh, these boys are so mischievous. Sometimes the older cowherd men would accuse Krishna, baby Krishna, you're a thief. Said, not a thief, you're a thief. And sometimes the older cowherd ladies, the older gopis, would go to Mother Yashoda to lodge complaints. And Krishna would be right there, and they would start talking about him. He does this, he does that. But then Krishna would start smiling, and everyone would forget their complaints. Mother Yashoda would always be in anxiety. Oh, what's happening to Krishna? Because she was worried. He's wandering around Vrindavan. Fire could get him. He could crawl over sharp objects. He could get into harm from some animal. So many things could happen. She was in constant anxiety like that. But was her anxiety material? No. The constant anxiety that she was in was pure spiritual. Showing you that in the spiritual world, there's anxiety, there's crying, but it's all pure bliss, perfectly in relation to Krishna, for Krishna's pleasure. Materialists, impersonalists, cannot understand this nature of the spiritual world. How there is anxiety, how there's crying, how there are all these emotions. They think, well, that's in the material world. How could it be in the spiritual world? They don't understand that what you see in the material world is the perverted reflection of what is there purely in the spiritual world. Mother Yashoda never cared to know that Krishna is God. Even when Krishna's friends told Mother Yashoda he's eaten dirt, she didn't hesitate to say, okay, let me see the evidence. Krishna, come open your mouth. Krishna told her, it's not true. My friends are lying. They're just angry because I won't play with them anymore. I wanted to go home for lunch. So they made up this story. They're lying. Mother Yashoda said, all right, let's just see what's in your mouth. Open your mouth. And of course, when Krishna opened her mouth, his mouth, she saw the whole cosmic manifestation. All the universes She even saw herself. And she couldn't understand this. What is this? Then after a while, she just thought, whatever it is anyway, it's not important. Her only concern was how to raise Krishna, how to protect Krishna. Even when she saw all these, this extraordinary mystical vision in Krishna's mouth, she was, I don't understand what this is, but anyway, let's get on with the family affairs. The pastime energy of Krishna, Yogamaya, arranges that all the devotees in Vrindavan are simply absorbed in loving Krishna, devoid of opulence and reverence. In this prayer we're hearing today, Tadiyejita Greshu Bhaktar Jitaktam. Krishna is demonstrating to the devotees who are absorbed in Vaikuntha reverence, who are attracted to the majesty and the opulence, he's demonstrating that there's another kind of love that will conquer me, and only that kind of love can conquer me. You see, as we said, there are devotees who are attracted to the opulence, the power, the grandeur of the Lord. Nothing wrong with that. But more tasty and personal for Krishna than that is when the love is intimate and free from all conceptions of awe and reverence. Krishna relishes that more. Suppose all day you had to be around persons who treated you officially. You would long for some intimate exchanges. Krishna, he accepts the official awe and worship and reverence of his devotees, but Vrindavan is his personal, intimate, confidential place for satisfying his personal, intimate desires, where he can just play with his devotees in loving pastimes. Pastime or lila means there's no force. That's why you can't say that ordinary entities have pastimes. No, as Krishna explains in Bhagavad Gita, Prakate Kriyamanani Gunai Karmani Sarvasha. All the living entities are forced to act by the gunas, the ropes of material nature. But ahankara vimudhatma, the fools think. Not only fool, in Sanskrit, mudha means fool, but ahankara vimudhatma. Vimudha means super fool. Bad enough to be a fool, but you have to be a super fool. The super fool thinks, all activities are actualized by me. Just me and my choices. When actually the main choice that you made was simply to jump into the ocean of material existence. After that, you're swept away. Your history. What does it mean? Your history. We understand the full import of that. It means you're a clone of the modes of material nature. Just like you take something small, maybe like a reed or a piece of grass, and you throw it in the ocean. Once it's thrown in the ocean, it's dashed about here and there by the waves. What shore it'll be carried to, we don't know. So you can say that way. It's history. Similarly, when you jump into the ocean of samsara, repeated birth and death, you become history. Washed here and there, sometimes happiness, sometimes distress, sometimes what you call love, sometimes hate. That's why the most amazing thing, I'm sure no one here has experienced it, the most amazing thing is to think you have fallen in love with someone, and then later you can't stand that person. I know it hasn't happened anywhere here. You know, one moment it's, oh, you are my everything. You're going to be my whole life. We just like to be around each other so much. And you project into the future, that's the way it's going to be. And then, sometime later, that same person, just get out of my life. I never want to see you again. This is what it's like to be carried here and there by the waves of material nature. And you call those waves different names. Happiness wave, distress wave, love wave, hate wave. Actually, it's just the ocean of material existence. You don't belong in that ocean. But you're trying to enjoy this being rocked about and bandied about by the waves. You're trying to enjoy it. You can't say that you're independent because you're being forced. You know all the examples I've given you so many times. You're forced to take birth. You're forced to have a particular type of body. You're forced to have desires in connection with that body. Therefore, how can you say you have pastimes or leelas? Just like you might say, well, I really like being attracted to this person. Well, why are you feeling that attraction? Why are you feeling that bodily and mental attraction? Because you must, because of having a material body. You have to feel those things. But you're caught up in the feeling. You don't think that you're a slave. You don't think you're a slave of passion. You think, oh, I'm feeling something for someone. How complete my life is. What you should think is, I'm a slave of my feelings. Why do you have to feel that? Krishna, however, is not forced to do anything. Therefore, he's the actual enjoyer, the only enjoyer. We get our enjoyment by assisting in Krishna's pleasure. Because we are parts of Krishna, when Krishna enjoys, we automatically feel the pleasure. But on our own, we can't be the enjoyer. We persist in this material world in trying to establish our own kingdoms, or queendoms, of enjoyment. That is our persistence. We're determined. Somehow or other, I'm going to make my own land of pleasure. And you're going to be a part of it, aren't you? And we're going to call it love. And you have it all worked out in your mind, don't you? You're going to do like this, and I'm going to do like that. You'll say this, and I'll say that. And got it all schemed out in your mind. Why? Because you're a prisoner of material nature. You don't think that. You think, oh, I'm choosing. I'm relating. I'm resonating. You don't think I'm a prisoner of material nature, a prisoner of my passions. Krishna doesn't have to do anything. He agrees to become conquered by his devotee's love. This is what he's demonstrating in his Damodar Lila. Tadiyeshita greshu bhaktar jitattvam. Bhaktar jitattvam. He's showing, pure love conquers me because I agree to let that happen. He's demonstrating to even devotees attracted to him in opulence and majesty. He's demonstrating, there's something else. I'm showing that now. Therefore, puna prema tastam shita vitti vande. With great love, again and again, I offer my obeisances to Lord Damodar. Hundreds and hundreds of times. Because of his demonstration of this bhaktarjitatvam, conquest by pure love. Mother Yasoda, when she nurses Krishna, she can see the teeth growing in his mouth, and she feels great maternal satisfaction as she's nursing baby Krishna. She sees those little teeth coming. And she's thinking, this is my baby boy. And what is Krishna thinking? He's thinking, this is my mother. The Yogamaya, the internal potency of the Lord, is causing everyone to relate in this way, both the Lord and his devotees. Krishna agrees, yes, let it go on like this. I want to think that this is my mother. I don't want to think I'm the supreme personality of Godhead. These are the mysteries of the topmost section of the spiritual world. And when you understand the topmost section of the spiritual world, you can actually start to understand the material world. Because in the material world, we're struggling to get these same flavors that are found in the topmost section of the spiritual world. We were reading from Nectar Devotion the other night, how everyone is trying to get flavor out of this world. That's what drives them on and on. Pursuit of flavor. But the original pure flavors are found in Goloka Vrindavan, and Krishna specializes in enjoying these original pure flavors: parental love, conjugal love, friendship love, like that. Therefore, once again, we advise you that this month of Kartik, you absorb yourself in this hearing and discussing this Damodar Leela. Krishna knows how to enthrall his devotees. Have no fear, have no doubt. Krishna knows how to push on a loving affair. And the goal of bhakti is that you can engage in loving pastimes with the Supreme Lord. But you have to have that confidence. Krishna knows how to love. Our entanglement in material life is a very emotional entanglement. Why? It's based on our lack of confidence that Krishna knows how to love. That is the bhava or emotional state of a conditioned soul. I've got to do everything myself. I've got to do my thing. Because Krishna doesn't know how to love. You've forgotten Krishna. This is the subconscious psychology. Therefore, you're forced to act in strange and weird ways. Just like from the point of view of mundane psychology, Sarah can tell you that if you have big problems in your childhood with parents, it marks your later years. Right? So, persons who haven't been loved by their parents in childhood, or even persons who have become abused by their parents, it affects their relationships in the future. Similarly, because we've forgotten Krishna, we've forgotten the love of Krishna. It's not that Krishna didn't love us, but we've forgotten it. So we could imitate God and be the enjoyer in this world. We do so many strange things. It's an emotional thing, being a conditioned soul. So this is the nature of the bhava of the conditioned soul. Krishna doesn't love me. Krishna can't love me. That's the subconscious understanding. I've got to get for myself. And Krishna consciousness, bhakti yoga, means to revive your confidence in Krishna's loving abilities, which are so unfathomable that he even agrees to come under the control of his devotees. Love. But Gargitattam. Any questions?